Hi everybody, I'm Jeff Suckendorf, CEO of UTD. I don't even know the name of my company anymore. It changed. We did that 5 times.
Is the name we changed?
Yeah, it's UTD Scuba Diving now, not Unified Team Diving.
But it's Unified Team Diving or UTD Scuba Diving. Right. Yeah.
You gotta have an official name.
It's UTD Scuba Diving.
Okay.
Hey everybody, Jeff here, back with another car cast in my little series of car casts. I do like this format. I am on my way from San Diego to Las Vegas for a bike race this weekend, and I think this is a good way for me to occupy some time in the middle of my 4.5 hour drive. I've been speaking recently to various groups about living with purpose. This is something I've been interested in for a really long time, and I've seen lots of different reactions to this talk, depending on the group. Some people just can't wait for it to end, and some people can't get enough and spend all sorts of time with me after. So it's run the gamut, but it's been really interesting to explore this topic. I've been fascinated by this for a long time. It's like, what is your purpose? What are you living for? What do you wake up for? And for those of you who've been listening to our podcast for a long time, you know I'm chasing down an hour record on the bike, and there's lots of stuff about the hour record that has to do with purpose. So I want to talk about one of the elements of this talk that I've been giving, and that is how to get really, really good at something. Because if you're going to live with purpose, I think it's really important that you're purpose benefits not only you, but other people. And so in order to benefit other people in some field or in some endeavor, I think you have to be good at it to some degree. Unless you want to be a politician, then it doesn't seem to matter. But for the rest of us, I think it's important to be good at what we're helping other people with. So I've been working for years on something called Your Path to Mastery. This is part of a workshop that I've developed for corporate trainers. And it's been a very successful way to get people to not only figure out what they're good at, but find a really clear road to getting good at something else. And that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, while it's really dark and there are no other cars on the road. Which is awesome. I love it. Through Los Angeles traffic before it gets crazy. So the idea of living with purpose, of course, has been interesting to me for a long, long time. But most recently, when I started chasing down this hour record on the bike, because it's a very self-centric thing to do, right? For me, it's how far can I ride my bike in an hour? And can I ride it farther in that hour than any other person in my age group, either in the US or in the world? And I work on this every day. And when I started this whole project, it was very much about me. Me, which, you know, for me is not a bad thing. I love talking about myself. But it got to a point where, why am I putting all of this super hard work in every day if it only benefits me? Now, you could argue that the hard work, the success on the bike, the failures on the bike, all of that makes me overall a better person and better able to do all the other things I do in my life. But still, personally, I wanted a more direct impact on people. There's always been a saying in mountain climbing that the reason you climb a mountain is because it's there, which is fine. If you want to risk your life and try something extreme and hopefully have a very successful endeavor at climbing a mountain only because it's there, I think that misses the boat on a ton of available impact that you can have not only on your own life, but on others. So there's lots of elements to this that are important. One, of course, is the training and the process of getting ready for something. Part of discovering something you like to do is enjoying the process that's going to take to get there. Another really critical element, and we've talked about this a lot in the podcasts over the years, is process-oriented training means work hard and the results become inevitable. Now, this doesn't mean train hard on the bike and win a bike race. It means train hard on the bike and you're able to do your best on the day of the race. One of the things about doing something in competition, of course, is you can't control anybody else. You can only control yourself. But if you don't enjoy the process, then there's no point. There's a thing that writers say, that the best part of writing is having written. And those are people who just hate the process. They just can't stand sitting down in front of a laptop or, you know, a notebook or a typewriter or whatever they're using and enjoying, you know, suffering through a blank piece of paper until it actually turns into something cool. If you love the process, the result becomes inevitable. If you love sitting down and writing every day to get your thoughts down, to get whatever you're working on into, you know, a chapter form, a book form, when the book comes out, it's not a letdown. It's an inevitable success. And I think that's super cool. So back to this bike ride, this hour record bike ride, what happened to me was at some point in the process, I realized I do love the process. I love the process of training. I love the process of working this hard for something. I'm not getting paid for it. I'm not a professional athlete. But the process makes me happy, even though it's hard. Even though there's a lot of suffering on the bike, there's a lot of working past my limit, there's a lot of sweat, literally, some tears. The process I enjoy because it just makes me feel good. It makes me feel stronger, better, more successful. And then I can apply all of that to the rest of my life. So let's talk about how any of us got good at something and how we can use that path to get good at something else. So this was a buzzword all through the 80s, right? Your path to mastery. What is your path to mastery? What is mastery? All of that. I started breaking this down years ago. So for me, there is a way to define a path to mastery. And in my life personally, I feel like I've gotten really good, really mastered a few things. Filmmaking is one of them, right? I had a 30-year filmmaking career. I got really good at that. Flying is another one. I spent a long time as a pilot and a flight instructor and an aerobatic competition pilot and a coach. And of course, scuba, where I have moved scuba diving from recreational diving to instructor, trainer, and coach. So when I start to look at the path that I took to all of these three different vocations or avocations that I've done in my life, the path is similar on each one. And this path is discovery, training, practice, and teaching. So we're going to look at all of those. But discovery, training, practice, teaching. Let me very quickly take you through how that path worked for me in filmmaking, flying, and scuba, because it's interesting and I think it's appropriate to this. So filmmaking was first. I was a child photographer. I was given a camera when I was like 8 or 7 or something like that. And I discovered that I had a penchant for photography. And I became a pretty good child photographer. I worked as a photographer all through high school. I started very young as a photographer on a newspaper. I eventually parlayed that into shooting some TV commercials, which turned into shooting feature films. And I went on to have a 35 or so year career in the film industry. So how did I get good at it? The first thing was discovery. I discovered photography at a really, really young age. And I immediately realized that I had to learn more about this. And I read, as a kid, everything I could find on photography. And I talked to photographers, and this was not when I was 8, but by now, you know, 12, 13, realized I wanted to get better at it. We had a little darkroom in my house. And so I took some classes and I worked with people and I trained, even at a young age, to become a better photographer. After that, it was down to practice. And, you know, you could argue that I practiced it for 35 years and still practicing, but the process was practice, training, practice, training, practice, training. Now, where I discovered the teaching part of it for the first time was after I took a filmmaking workshop at a very famous workshop facility called the Maine Photographic Workshops. They had a filmmaking division of that workshop program up in Rockport, Maine. And I went up and I took a class in lighting, learned a ton in a very short period of time because the learning was structured and, you know, it met my needs for how I like to learn, which is very kinesthetic, very much doing things. So I took a class and I went out and I used that material that I learned in that class in my work. So I was actually a working filmmaker when I took this lighting workshop. And then I went back to working as a filmmaker, utilizing these things, these new tools and techniques I learned in that workshop. Well, I had such a good experience with it, I called them up and said, hey, I want to help on the next one. So the following year, I drove back up to Maine. I was living in the Northeast. And I became an assistant on some of these classes in lighting and other elements of cinematography. That process began my career of teaching, and I went on over the decades to eventually teach almost every class that that workshop program offered in filmmaking. I believe you get good at something when you teach it. That's the point in your career where you have mastered it. Discovery, training, practice, teaching. For filmmaking, it was discovery. Somebody handed me a camera when I was a child. Training, I did that my whole life. Practice, I did that my whole life. And teaching, I did that for my whole professional life. And the teaching is where you learn it. We've said a ton of times that when the student learns 10 things, the teacher learns 100. And it's true. The best way for you to learn something is to teach it, because you're challenged all the time. We talk about levels of learning, right? Rote, understanding, application, and correlation. Rote is memorization, understanding is how something works, application is why something works, and correlation is using that information in a new scenario. So teaching, you're always challenged in new scenarios because students are amazing at coming up with questions you never thought about. And you're forced to take everything you know and apply it in a new situation. That's correlation. That's what happens in teaching. So that's how I get good at filmmaking, and I was able to do that for my whole career as a filmmaker. And I really felt I was giving a lot back to the filmmaking community. So while I was making movies, while I was making TV commercials, along comes all of these opportunities to teach. And I taught in that workshop program for close to 25 years. And it was super cool. Then for me, flying became the next thing. And again, I have the same path. Discovery, training, practice, teaching. But it's a little more clear cut. Discovery was, I think flying would be really interesting. Let me go to the airport, plop down $50, and take the little half-hour test ride. And I was hooked immediately. Training is obvious. In order to get a pilot's license, a certificate to fly, you need to train. So I trained, I got a pilot certificate, and I started practicing. I flew a lot, I practiced, I got an instrument rating, I got a commercial pilot's license, I eventually found aerobatics. And it was practice, training, practice, training, practice, training for years until one day I thought, okay, now I have it enough that I think I can teach it. So the next step in this thing was becoming a flight instructor, which of course takes practice, training, practice, training, practice, training. And then I started to teach flying. And I really settled into teaching competition aerobatic flying, which is a very challenging type of flight instruction because in many cases you're teaching people to fly their single seat airplanes, which means I'm sitting on the ground with a radio, looking up, trying to figure out what that pilot is doing with the controls to make the airplane do what it's doing and how can I help them adjust that not being in the airplane. That makes you really good at picturing your own self flying from a vision of outside the airplane. It's kind of like flying remote control airplanes. It's really cool, where you're separated out from your body. It's a very interesting scenario. But it worked because it goes back to correlation. As a flight instructor, you're challenged to find ways to explain things you haven't explained before, using all of your background and all of your history to do it. So that's flying. Scuba took the exact same thing. The reason I got into scuba was a little bit different. In the filmmaking workshop, I had an opportunity to assist on an underwater filmmaking workshop. They said, are you scuba certified? I said, no. They were like, all right, get scuba certified and you can come join us. I was like, well, that sounds like fun. So I took a class. Back then it was like 8 or 10 weeks of training. I did it throughout the winter. When the spring finally broke, I got in some freezing cold lake in upstate New York and got scuba certified, which of course means you know nothing. Back then, all it meant is you knew how to use the scuba equipment. I really had no idea what scuba diving was, but I liked it. And I was able to integrate scuba into my other work. So I had an opportunity to discover and then train and then practice scuba diving while I was working, which was kind of dangerous, actually, because when you don't know anything about scuba diving and you're trying to work, which is occupational diving, it really taxes the limits of everything you know. And somehow I managed to survive that. But I liked it, and I became a recreational scuba diver, and I started traveling around places that were easy for me to get to. I was on the Northeast, so the Caribbean was easy. Lakes in upstate New York were cold, but they were easy. A little bit of ocean diving in the Atlantic was cold and challenging and forced me to take more classes and so on. And then when I moved to California, it became even easier because the Pacific Ocean was, you know, 15 minutes from my house. So I was able to go back into that routine of practice, training, practice, training, practice, training. Take an advanced class. Take a nitrox class, take a dry suit class, just take classes. But because I lived near the ocean, I was able to practice all the time. The trap in this is all you do is practice. I have scuba coaching clients now who practice too much. My job with them oftentimes is, okay, enough. Go in the ocean and take what you've used and play with it and have some fun and have some success with it. Wow, it just started raining. Driving to a bike race in the rain. This will be interesting. So what I know and what I knew at that time was the next obvious step for me in scuba diving was to try to teach it. I became a scuba instructor, again, through the same process of discovery. Oh, I think I want to teach this. Training, take the course, practice, and of course, it resolves with teaching. I did have one scuba instructor tell me one time that he thought he should take his first 5 or 10 students and give all their money back because he felt as a new teacher, he really knew nothing and didn't do his students a good service. And I thought that was an interesting thing because when you start teaching, you also have to go through the same process of training, practice, training, practice, training, practice. So I started teaching some scuba classes. Eventually, we started Unified Team Diving, which became UTD Scuba Diving. And early in the process, I became a UTD instructor and then an instructor trainer and then an instructor trainer trainer. The cool part for me is, for the most part, those instructor candidates and instructor trainer candidates are asking hard questions about teaching, about student psychology, about subjects that challenge me. So it's been really interesting to go through this process of becoming an instructor, trainer, trainer, because each time I do it, I'm challenged all the more. So let's talk about you, because that was a long road of talking about me. How do you, A, figure out what you're good at, and B, learn to be good at something else? This is the goal of this whole talk. How do you learn to be good at something new? Which goes back to purpose. If you're looking for a new purpose, be it scuba or flying or cycling or filmmaking or writing or running triathlons or learning how to garden or becoming a farmer or learning how to fix your car, whatever it is, the process is always the same. Discovery, I like this. training, I found a class, practice, I'm utilizing what I learned in that class, then training, practice, training, practice, training, practice, and eventually get to the point of teaching. So what I want to do is challenge all of you to come up with something in life that you think you're really, really good at. And this could be anything, right? It could be managing employees in an HR department. It could be being a great doctor, being a great nurse, being a great software developer, being a great carpenter, being a great plumber, being a great anything. Particularly if in that field, in that avocation, you had the opportunity to teach. Now, teaching doesn't mean you have to stand up in front of a class and lecture wearing like a tweed jacket with patches on the elbows. Teaching means you're guiding somebody to learn what you know. It could be through mentoring, it could be through coaching, it could be through workshops, it could be through running employee training classes, it could be through anything. Doesn't really matter. So let's find something you're good at and let's write down how you got there. So grab a piece of paper. This is best if you do it on paper, not on a computer. And write down these four steps: discovery, training, practice, teaching. And take this thing, whatever this thing is that you feel like you're good at, and write down the moment in time in your life where you discovered that thing. Not where it became your job, although maybe you got hired to do something specific. So how did you discover something? And then write down what your training was in that field. Now, it could be just on-the-job training, which is, I think, the worst way to learn something, because it generally impacts the people around you in a not very good way. When you're thrown into the pond with no life preserver and you're struggling to figure out how to do something, there's usually an impact on that. Now, sometimes it can be really functional. Often it just means you're being really inefficient. And eventually, in that scenario, people go search for training. So what is the training that you did to get good at this thing that we're talking about that you wrote down? The next step is practice. It's possible that you practice after one training event and that's it, you're done. Although it's rare. For example, kids maybe take a driving ed course and that's the last training they ever do. And you can tell when you're driving around because they're texting and eating and drinking half-calf, double decaf lattes while they're driving poorly because they took one training event. It might have been with a parent. What a train wreck that could be. It might have been with an older sibling. It might have been in school. But driving is a very classic scenario where you discover you want to learn to drive. You want the freedom. You turn 18 or 17 or 16 or whatever it is. And then somebody teaches you how to drive, often badly. And then you practice, often badly, sometimes for 50 or 60 or 70 years. And maybe you get to teach someone else how to drive sometime. But that's a one-off event for a lot of people where there's very little training. There's only practice. If you want to drive a truck, a long-haul truck, it's the opposite. Discover that it might be a good idea. Go take a course. There's your training. Practice it for endless hours on the road. And then occasionally do recurrent training and practice and recurrent training and practice. And maybe you'll get to a point where you end up taking new people with you in that driving scenario. I have trained in diving lots of firemen in my life. And I have one good friend who was on an ambulance, and he often had new medical technicians riding with him in the ambulance. So those people, for somehow, discovered they wanted to do this. This was part of their training and practice and training and practice. And eventually, hopefully, they'll teach it. And this is what my friend did. He discovered it years ago. He practiced for decades, and eventually he started mentoring new people. So what did you do to teach this skill or whatever it is we're talking about that you're good at, in a coaching scenario, in a mentoring scenario, or in a formal training scenario. All right, so if you hung in this long on this podcast, here's the secret sauce. Find something that you want to be good at and apply these four steps the same way, even if it's in the future. What could that be? I'm in the middle of it with cycling. I discovered cycling when I was a child. I discovered being coached as a cyclist when I was in my 50s. And I started training, practicing. And dozens of triathlons and lots of bike racing. And it's only very, very recently that I have started coaching endurance athletes. It took a decade and a half for me to feel comfortable enough that I could apply what I knew in cycling to swim, bike, and run. The reason this idea for this podcast came up goes back to speaking to groups about purpose. I have found I'm speaking to groups about people who are forced to change purpose, people who are coming into retirement, people who are waking up one morning and they're a caretaker for an ill spouse, people whose job ends for any number of reasons, layoff, reorganization, got fired, got fed up, just quit. People who have had their purpose defined by what they do, no longer have that thing to do, and are forced to find new purpose. We see this when people retire. They think, I'm just going to garden and golf for the rest of my life. And that usually lasts a couple of months when serious amounts of boredom slip in. If you're looking for new purpose, if you're looking to try something new, this is a great exercise. What did you do to discover this new thing you want to try? How do you get the training? Where do you practice? And then, do you get to a point of teaching? So I had an opportunity to speak yesterday with somebody who called UTD about becoming a scuba coaching client. And she was very clear that she was at an impasse on training. Discovery, that was easy. I love it. Training, that only went okay. Because for this particular person, what she was telling me is that a one-and-done class wasn't working for her. Whether or not she was learning how to practice properly is likely part of the problem, but you know, she felt unsatisfied by the results of this class and was looking for something else as a way to train that would slow the process down. And of course, the UTD scuba coaching program is amazing for that, because that's what we do. We slow the process down and we teach you how to practice. So now she's in a coaching program that's just starting where we're going to teach her how to be better at scuba. And in being better, more doors will open, more opportunities will open. And, you know, my dream is that if she loves it, she'll teach others. Which is cool. That's already happening because she brought her boyfriend into the coaching program. So already she's getting a vision of what teaching is like to master something. I think that's really cool. So this was kind of a long road to get to a very simple thing. If you're ready to discover something new, or if you're ready to take what you're already doing to the next level, my goal for everybody who wants to go to that point is to learn how to teach. Teaching is the best, most satisfying way to master anything. Put yourself out there. Put yourself in a scenario where people are challenging you with questions you never even dreamed existed. Never be afraid to say, I don't know. If you say, I don't know, it should have a caveat with, let me figure it out and I'll get back to you. It proves that you're being challenged. So challenge yourself in two ways. Challenge yourself through your practice and training. But challenge yourself as you develop ways to guide other people into whatever this field is that you're doing. And if you don't feel like you want to do something new, think about it anyway. Maybe there was some dream you had as a child that you haven't pursued yet. I talked about writing earlier. Maybe it's write a book. Well, write down the process that you could go through to write a book. Give some structure to learning how to write a book and actually accomplishing it. Discovery, training, practice, teaching. And give it a shot. See what happens. This doesn't have to be a decades-long experience. You can compress this into a shorter period of time. You just have to be careful that you do your students or your mentees or the people you're guiding a good service. Teaching without the background is generally not a good idea. Our big joke in scuba is there are scuba forums that we've been reading for years, and the most frightening thing in a scuba forum is, for example, somebody in a technical diving forum who says, "I'm not a technical diver, but," or somebody in a rebreather diving forum who writes in their post, "I've never used a rebreather, but here's what I think you should do." Those people have absolutely no business trying to teach anybody anything. Get good and then get teaching. If you have questions about this, if you'd like some guidance on this, if you find it interesting, you can shoot me a note through any of the websites, utdscubadiving.com, instituteofpurpose.org, where there's lots more information about living with purpose. And see if you can figure out something that challenges you, that takes you to the next level, and does an amazing service in the world by guiding your students, your mentees, your people to a new level. So thanks for listening. I hope you found this interesting. As always, leave us a rating and review, and I will look forward to catching you on the next podcast or microcast or carcast or whatever it is we do next. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. Looking inside, hell is going outside.